Okay, so we've got this letter you sent over, this letter written in 2014 by Moshe Barzvi, the founder of loveisrael.com. And he's writing from Tel Aviv while Hamas is launching rocket attacks.
It's a pretty
Yeah, it's a
intense
pretty intense situation for sure.
yeah
And so he's writing to
um
fellow lovers of Israel,
yeah
and he's talking about this idea of a perpetual covenant.
right And
And
very powerful.
that's what really stood out to me, was this idea of a perpetual covenant.
And how that plays out in a
The feature
situation
present
like this.
play out in a situation like this, where there's so much conflict and danger.
Well, one of the things that really struck me was just how direct he is in naming what's going on. I mean, he calls Hamas a terror organization straight out, and points out that it's recognized as such by the U.S. And he says their goal is to inflict as much harm as possible on Jewish people.
Yeah, he doesn't,
Yeah.
you know, he doesn't mince words.
Mincing words, it's
So
very
if,
clear and direct.
yeah, and it's not just the words.
Right.
It's the actions too. So he
Exactly.
describes Hamas launching rockets from civilian areas like daycare centers.
And he specifically points out that this is a violation of the Geneva Conventions, which are designed to protect civilians in wartime.
And it makes you wonder, I mean,
Right. Right.
what are the implications of that when you have a group that is just so blatantly disregarding
It
international
raises a lot of
humanitarian law?
ethical and legal questions.
Yeah, and he also mentions other groups like Hezbollah and
Right.
Al-Qaeda.
It's not just an isolated conflict.
It feels like this is part of a much
Right.
bigger struggle.
Almost a global struggle.
Yeah, and he traces this animosity back to Israel's founding in 1948.
1948, that's a long
So this is not something that's going to be easily resolved.
No, it suggests some very deep roots to this conflict.
Yeah, so you've got this backdrop of intense conflict, this long history of animosity,
Exactly.
and then you read about this $40 million
I was surprised by that too.
unpaid electricity debt that Gaza owes to Israel.
You would think that under attack, Israel would just cut them off.
You would think.
But the letter says that they're still supplying electricity for humanitarian reasons.
It's complicated.
It is.
And he mentions the Palestinian Authority
Right. And that adds another layer to the whole thing.
in this context.
Because you have to wonder what role they're playing in all of this. I mean, could things be different in Gaza if those funds were being used for development instead of rockets?
That's a good question.
It's a lot to untangle, for sure.
There's also this David versus Goliath narrative that,
Right, the classic underdog story.
gets attached to the conflict, and Barzvi seems really frustrated with that.
It makes sense, though. When you think about it, the biblical story of David and Goliath, it's often used to portray a smaller, weaker entity overcoming a more powerful one. But in this case, it's a bit of an oversimplification, don't you think?
I think so.
I mean, to apply that to the Israeli-Palestinian conflict, it's just not that simple.
No, and especially from Barzvi's perspective,
Exactly.
you know, he's writing from a place of fear and uncertainty, and to be labeled as the Goliath in that situation,
Right.
it's got to be frustrating.
Yeah, I could see why he would push back against that.
And especially because he's a man of faith.
Right. He mentions his belief in the Bible.
He talks about his belief in the Bible and God's promise of Israel to the Jewish people.
Right. He sees this as a perpetual covenant,
This perpetual
an
covenant.
unbreakable bond.
And yet here he is facing this very real danger.
That's the tension, isn't it?
It is.
How do those two ideas coexist?
How do you reconcile that belief in divine protection with the need for very real human defenses?
It's a question that a lot of people grapple with.
I would think so.
I mean, he seems to believe in both.
Yeah, he puts his trust in the Israeli army, but he also emphasizes the importance of prayer.
So it's like a two-pronged approach.
Almost like he's saying, you know, we have to do our part
Right.
and trust that God will do his part as well.
It's a fascinating interplay between faith and action.
Absolutely.
And it really gets to the heart of what this perpetual covenant means.
Yeah, what does that actually mean? Does it guarantee safety, or does it require something from the people as well?
It's a deep theological question, but it also has real-world implications
Absolutely.
because it shapes how people view the conflict and how they respond to it.
Yeah, one quote that really stood out to me
You could.
was from Jeremiah. It says, Yes, I have loved you with an everlasting love. Therefore, with loving kindness, have I drawn you and continued my faithfulness to you.
Powerful words.
And it speaks to that idea of an unbreakable bond.
It does.
It does, that he feels.
It's like that covenant is a bedrock of his faith.
Yeah.
And his understanding of the world.
And it's not just an abstract concept. Like, he connects it directly to the Sabbath,
right,
calling it a symbol of God's everlasting love for Israel.
Interesting connection.
It is. Yeah. And he even quotes Exodus.
Okay.
He says, wherefore the children of Israel shall keep the Sabbath, mm-hmm, to observe the Sabbath throughout their generations for a perpetual covenant.
So he's tying this very specific ritual,
yeah,
to this much broader concept.
So it's more than just a day of rest. It's, yeah, a tangible way.
Exactly. It's a way to
reaffirm this agreement.
Reaffirm that covenant, to remember it, to live it out.
But what does that mean for the conflict itself?
That's the question, isn't it?
Yeah. How does this perpetual covenant shape his worldview,
right,
and his actions?
How does it inform his understanding of the conflict and what needs to be done?
Yeah. How does he reconcile that with the reality of the situation he's facing?
To understand that, we need to go a little deeper,
okay,
into the history and theology behind this idea of a perpetual covenant.
Yeah, because it's obviously a very powerful concept for him.
Absolutely.
It's not just a passive belief. It's something that seems to be driving his entire perspective on the conflict.
It's at the core of his identity and his understanding of the world.
And it's shaping how he sees his role in all of this.
Exactly.
So let's delve into that a little bit more.
Okay, let's do it. This idea of a covenant, it goes way back, you know, to the Torah, to the foundational texts of Judaism.
Okay, so it's like an agreement.
It is an agreement, yeah.
Okay.
God promises to bless and protect the descendants of Abraham, and in return, they pledge their obedience and devotion.
So it's not just like God's going to take care of you.
No, it's a two-way street.
They have to hold up their end of the bargain, too.
Exactly. There are obligations on both sides.
Okay.
And the Sabbath.
Right.
You know, which Bart Zvi keeps coming back to.
Right.
It's a key part of this covenant.
How so?
Well, it's a tangible reminder, you know, of this agreement. A way for Jewish people to acknowledge God's creation and reaffirm their commitment.
So it's not just about taking a day off.
No, it's much more than that.
It's like an act of participation in this relationship.
Exactly. It's a ritual, a practice.
And he uses the word perpetual.
Right.
And that really stands out.
That's not a temporary thing.
This isn't just some kind of truce.
No, it's about an eternal bond.
An unbreakable bond.
Yeah.
This is serious stuff.
It speaks to this belief, you know, that this isn't just any nation.
Right.
This is a divinely chosen people.
A people with a destiny.
Yeah, a special destiny.
And that changes everything, doesn't it?
It does. It has huge implications for how people view this whole conflict.
Because if you believe that your very existence is divinely ordained, then any threat to that existence becomes
an existential threat.
It's not just about land or resources. Right. It's about survival on a whole other level.
Exactly. It becomes a spiritual battle.
And so how do you reconcile that belief in divine protection with the need for actual, you know,
with the very real threats they face?
Tanks and guns and soldiers.
It's a tough question.
Yeah, because Bart Zvi clearly believes in both.
He does.
He expresses faith in the Israeli army.
Yeah.
But he also calls upon others to pray for their safety.
So is he saying that these two things work together?
That's what I'm wondering.
Is military might a way of proving their commitment?
Like they're doing their part.
Yeah. Are they fulfilling their end of the covenant through action?
It makes you think about the implications.
It does.
Because if you believe God has promised you this land,
right,
does that justify any means of defending it?
That's a big question.
Where do you draw the line?
Mm-hmm. Between faith and force.
Hmm. That's heavy stuff. And we've been talking a lot about Bart Zvi's perspective.
Yeah. His letter gives us a really powerful insight into his thinking.
But we can't forget the other side of this.
Of course not.
The Palestinians.
They have their own story to tell.
Their own beliefs.
Their own history. Their own narrative.
Yeah.
And it shapes how they view this whole situation.
We've talked about Hamas.
Right. Their actions, their ideology.
But what about the Palestinian Authority?
Yeah, he mentions them briefly.
In relation to the electricity debt.
Right. But their role is a little unclear.
It is a little ambiguous.
Like, where do they stand in all of this?
Yeah, they're often presented as the more moderate voice.
Yeah, the voice of reason.
But they're operating in this incredibly difficult situation.
It's caught in the middle.
It seems like they're trying to represent the Palestinian people.
Yeah.
But they're also dealing with pressure from Hamas.
Right.
And the complexities of negotiating with Israel.
It's a tough spot to be in.
It is. And it's a reminder that this isn't a simple situation.
No, it's very complex.
There's no easy answers.
There are so many layers to this conflict.
So many historical grievances.
Competing claims.
Religious beliefs.
Yeah, and it all gets tangled up.
Yeah.
It makes finding a solution incredibly difficult.
It does, and it's easy to get lost in the politics of it all.
Right, in the headlines and the rhetoric.
But Barzvi's letter brings us back to something fundamental.
They're the human element.
It reminds us that this conflict is about real people.
People living with fear and uncertainty.
People trying to make sense of it all.
People clinging to their beliefs as a source of strength.
Yeah, and that's something we can't lose sight of. I feel like we've barely scratched the surface here, you know?
I know, right?
It's there's so much to unpack.
It's a lot to take in, for sure.
Yeah, we've got this intense personal letter, you know?
Right, from the heart of the conflict.
This glimpse into one man's experience, the weight of history, these powerful religious beliefs.
And all the questions that come with it.
Yeah, it's a lot. How do we even begin to make sense of it all?
It's a challenge. There's no easy answers.
It's not like there's a clear-cut solution, right?
No.
And that's what Barzvi's letter really drives home, I think.
It does.
You know, it reminds us that these aren't just abstract political debates. There are real lives at stake.
Real people with real families.
Yeah. People grappling with real dangers.
And making life or death decisions.
It's easy to forget that when you're just reading the headlines.
It is. You get caught up in the statistics.
Yeah. And the political rhetoric.
All the noise.
But this letter, it forces us to confront the human side of it all.
The fear, the uncertainty.
Yeah.
The search for meaning.
Yeah. And it really highlights the limitations of those simplistic narratives, you know, like
right.
The David versus Goliath thing.
Yeah, it's just not that simple.
The reality is far more nuanced.
So much more complex.
Yeah, with layers of history and competing claims. Mm-hmm. This whole interplay of religion and politics.
It's all intertwined.
And we talked about the Palestinian Authority, you know, and I'm still kind of wrestling with their role in all of this.
It's a tough one, isn't it?
Yeah, because they're often presented as the more moderate voice.
Yeah, the voice of reason.
But they're also operating within this incredibly difficult context.
They're walking a tightrope.
It really is a balancing act.
Yeah, trying to represent the Palestinian people, but also dealing with pressure from Hamas.
Right.
And the complexities of negotiating with Israel.
It just makes you realize there's no easy solution here.
Not at all.
No magic formula.
It's not something you can just solve with a treaty.
This requires a much deeper understanding.
Yeah, you'd have to dig deeper.
Of the historical grievances.
The religious beliefs.
The psychological scars.
All the things that shape the conflict.
It's complicated.
It is.
But Barzvi's letter, you know, written under threat of rocket fire.
Right, under immense pressure.
It's a testament to the power of belief.
It really is.
It shows how faith can provide strength and resilience in the face of adversity.
How it can help people cope with unimaginable hardship.
But it also raises questions.
It does.
About how those beliefs can sometimes fuel the conflict.
Right.
And make compromise even more difficult.
It's a double-edged sword.
So how do we reconcile that?
Well, that's a big question.
How do we reconcile these deeply held beliefs with the need for peaceful coexistence?
It's the ultimate challenge.
How do we bridge the gap?
Yeah, how do we find common ground?
When there's so much history and pain and distrust.
It's not easy.
I don't have the answers.
No one does.
But this this deep dive.
This exploration.
Has given me a lot to think about.
Me too.
It's a reminder that understanding is the first step.
To empathy.
Yeah, and empathy is crucial if we want to find a way forward.
Absolutely.
Barzvi's letter, it's just one piece of a much larger puzzle.
Right.
It's one perspective.
One set of beliefs.
One experience of this complex conflict.
And we need to hear more of those stories.
We do. We need to listen to other voices.
To get a fuller picture.
To engage with the human stories.
Yeah, the stories behind the headlines.
Because ultimately, peace isn't just about ending the violence. It's about something much deeper.
It's about building bridges.
About creating a world where people can coexist.
Despite their differences.
It's a long and difficult journey.
It is.
But it starts with each of us.
Yeah, taking the time to listen.
To learn.
To seek understanding.
And that's the hope we can take away from this, you know?
Yeah.
Even in the midst of all this conflict, the human spirit, it still yearns for peace.
It
yearns for connection, for understanding.
And that yearning, that hope, it's what drives us to keep searching.
To keep learning.
To keep striving for a better world.
To never give up.
This has been...
quite the journey.
This has been quite a journey, yeah.
It has.
Thanks for joining us on this deep dive.
We appreciate you being here.
We encourage you to keep exploring, keep questioning.
Keep searching for those deeper truths that connect us all.
Because that's where the real work begins.
It does.